Yeah, freak out, freak out. It's a freaky Friday the 13th. And Chris Walder, if anything happens to me, I blame the bad luck on you. Because you're the problem. You understand that?
Oh my god, I just realized that it's Friday the 13th. Thanks for reminding me, man. Tomorrow's Valentine's Day. This could be a bad omen leading into the loveliest day of the year.
Well, you never know. I mean, you got your shopping done. By the way, I'm James Warbath. He's Chris Walder. We have a very big show for you today. But Walder informed me. Your girlfriend, she doesn't listen to the podcast, right? Does she?
She's listened to it a couple of times.
Oh, okay. Maybe we shouldn't say this then.
No, go ahead.
Well,
I'm sure to warn her.
Well, Walder did tell me that he just got finished his Valentine's Day shopping here on the 13th of February, just hours before malls close. So good job, Walder. Way to get in there under the wire.
Cutting it close, as always.
Alrighty. We got a big show today. I wasn't kidding about that. We have a guest from Ring of Honor, one of the men who will be challenging Jay Briscoe for his World Heavyweight Championship, the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship, that is. Tommaso Ciampa is joining the program for the first time. We are excited to have him on board. And oh boy, what a week it was for me, Chris Walder. You know I'm excited.
Dude, just let it out, James. Just go for it.
It is not often in the same week that I can rave about both the Young Bucks, who, by the way, are your new IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions, and Kevin Owen Steen, whatever you want to say, is your new NXT champion. I am absolutely floored by the fact that Steen won that, or Owens won that match. I just couldn't imagine it happening. My God, what a beginning for this guy in this company.
Just bask. This, you're the biggest Kevin Steen fan. You're the biggest Young Bucks fan. Your boys, in less than a week, won two major championships. So, to take the floor, tell us how you felt when Kevin Owens, who didn't even pin Zayn, by the way, he knocked him out. How cool is that? Tell us how you feel, buddy.
Yeah, KO for KO. That was pretty cool. Someone brought that up on Twitter, and I never had thought of that myself. One of the things, some fans did not like the ending of that match. I thought it was fantastic. Because in a wrestling world where I'm so accustomed to, there's the decision, I know what happened, and I've usually guessed what's going to happen before it happens, I didn't know what the result was at the end of that match. I mean, it was unclear what had happened there. Obviously, the match was stopped, but did Kevin actually win the match? Did he win the belt? Was he disqualified? What happened? And when that referee went over and got that belt and all of a sudden handed it to Kevin Steen, it was like suddenly that crowd went from booing the ending live to cheering half for Kevin Steen. And that crowd was very split at Full Sail. I was surprised how much support was actually in the house for Kevin Steen or Kevin Owens on that night.
Well, we were about to get like a shady WWE television kind of ending where the match was going to stop. Sami Zayn was going to retain the championship because he didn't lose. And I was ready to just go wild on Twitter. I was like, oh, they can't possibly end it like this, can they? But when they handed the belt to Kevin Owens and the fans just, like, absolutely lost it. And you could tell, like, you could see the genuine emotion in his face. Like, that moment meant the world to him. And he said afterwards with Renee Young that his parents were there and his son was there. His wife was back at home. But, I mean, that was just the culmination of so much hard work on his part. And regardless if he was, you know, healing it up or facing it up or whatever, the fans enjoyed it. And for the people out there who didn't like that ending, they need to stick it where it hurts because that match was just, it was art. It was wrestling art. It didn't have to be the flashiest like it was with Balor and Neville. It didn't have to be the most technically sound match. Zayn and Owens told a story for 15 minutes, and the ending was perfect.
The whole entire build to this was a story, and I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was great. I quite honestly couldn't believe what I was watching. And credit to Triple H, who, as he often does, gets together with the media before these big events go down. And he said himself he would have been foolish to ignore the 14-year story that is between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And you know, it played out on this big stage, and when we talk with Tommaso later on, we actually talk, and this is before Kevin had won, the title, but we actually talk about how amazing Kevin's run had been to that point in NXT, and now the NXT champion. I mean, just unbelievable the faith that this company has put behind Kevin Owens. It's truly amazing.
2 months to the day of joining NXT, he's already the NXT champion. And when we made our predictions, I felt that Kevin Owens had a really good shot of winning, just because, I mean, Sami Zayn, it turns out, is going to be taken off of the following television tapings. I know you don't actually read the spoilers or whatever, but he's working overseas doing the tour with Abu Dhabi. And so Owens holding the belt, I mean, he's going to be there. He's a heel. There's so many faces on NXT right now. So he's going to be holding that belt for quite a while, and I can't wait to see what he pulls off in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and it just seemed too soon. Like, that was the only thing why I wasn't picking Kevin to win that match. I just thought, like put this in perspective. Kevin, of course, coined the phrase, you know, 2 months to the day since his debut. That was his third match in NXT that we've seen on television.
Yeah.
His third match, and he wins the title. Amazing.
And, I mean, with Sami Zayn, it's almost just better for his character to book him as, like, that sympathetic face who needs to overcome, like, you know, one of his demons from the past. And Kevin Owens, it kind of reminds me of the title runs that Jeff Hardy used to have back in the day, where he would win, he would have this big, glorious moment, you know, confetti coming down, the fans finally, you know, believing in their hero, and then, like, in his first title defense, he drops it and he does the chase all over again. So it works for Sami and it works for Kevin Owens because he's the perfect counterpart for him.
Oh no, we have the new and improved version of Jeff Hardy now in Finn Balor, I think, with the
paint, oh yeah,
the paint and everything, and clearly not the baggage that one Jeff Hardy has had in his past. Finn Balor put on a great performance with Adrian Neville. I wonder where Adrian Neville goes from here. Because I think, you know, there's talk he might end up on the main roster. I tend to think not. I tend to think they teased the idea of him going heel. I think it's all set up to actually do that. And I think the reason you turned him heel is because this is a guy on the main roster. He needs a manager. And you can't have a babyface manager in 2014, 15. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I feel bad for the guy because he's kind of like the odd man out now, but he had his, you know, almost year-long title reign as NXT champion, and you get the feeling now that NXT is putting more of an emphasis on Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, so there's maybe not a lot of room for Adrian Neville to kind of shuffle himself back up into the main spot right now. So if they want to move him up to the main roster, fine. I still feel like, you know, in the months after WrestleMania where things kind of die down on television, that might be a good time to debut him. But for now, I just keep him down there. There's really no need to ruin him yet. I mean, there's probably still a couple more matches with a couple of other guys that he can execute at this point.
But personally, I think if you keep him down there, you keep him down there to do the turn. Make him the heel before he comes up.
I don't know if he's a believable heel, though, because he's not that great on the mic, and a heel has to be convincing.
But that's why I say, whether it be at NXT or on the main roster, get a manager in there for him.
Yeah.
Make him a heel. Make him bitter about everything that's happened to him. I mean, he's had all these face-versus-face matches that he has not come out on top of. His character needs to go heel. Like, it's all written out there for me, as far as I'm concerned. But that being said, it is what it is. The women on this card, my God. Based on just match quality and not thinking about storyline and what all these matches necessarily meant, I think you can make a strong argument that was the match of the night. And in a four-way, too, which is, you ask pro wrestlers, not an easy match to work. We'll talk about it with Tommaso Ciampa later on, as he's going to be in a four-way in the ROH's pay-per-view for their world title, but not an easy match to work, and Charlotte and the rest of the ladies put on a tremendous performance. I thought Sasha Banks at the end of that match looked every bit of what her gimmick says she is, and I don't think she ever has looked like that until that night.
It was definitely the first or second best match on the card. I was surprised by how good it was. I said earlier, you know, when Natalya and Charlotte fought in the finals of the Women's Championship Tournament at one of the earlier NXT arrivals, or NXT takeovers, I thought that might be the best women's match since, you know, Lita and Trish Stratus, which I saw when they did the match in Toronto in Trish's last match. But this was just as good as both of those matches. My hat's off to all four ladies. You know, even Becky Lynch, who the announcers were kind of burying throughout the entire thing, saying she didn't deserve the shot. All she really did was cost Sasha Banks. I mean, she was just as good as anyone else in that ring. And for WWE to book, you know, Sasha Banks having Charlotte, of all people, in the submission and then pinning her, I think that's the perfect way. I thought for sure they would have her pin, you know, Bailey or Becky, because you want to keep Charlotte looking strong. But to beat the champion, it makes Sasha look all the better. And, yeah, she deserves the reign. She's really stepped up her game.
Well, who was going to be the fourth girl? Blue Pants?
What do you mean? Well, I mean, Bailey was there too, right? She could.
No. But what I'm saying is, you said the announcers were bashing like the fact that Becky Lynch was in the match. Who was going to be the fourth girl in the match?
Well, they could Blue have Pants? They could have just done a triple threat, right?
It was a joke, Walder.
I know. Well, it was Blue, funny. You and your damn Blue Pants jokes, man. Well, watch, she'll be the next champion. How about that?
Yeah, Blue Pants versus Sasha Banks. We're booking it for the next big outing. No, probably not happening, but. It is an interesting time, and I think coming out of this, this is a big opportunity for Sasha Banks now. I think she's really put herself on the map. I think all along she's been a good wrestler and had a good character, but was always in the shadows of a Charlotte, in the shadows of a Summer Rae, who used to be down there. I think now it's her show, it's her time to shine, and... you know, WWE is going to want to see this girl succeed. I mean, she's a cousin of Snoop Dogg. She's kind of got some nice backstory to her. I think, you know, she'll be given every opportunity to shine.
And you know they'll throw her on Total Divas, too. But I actually read an interesting report about why WWE hasn't brought Charlotte up yet. And it has a lot to do with her look. And they feel like she doesn't represent what the Divas kind of movement is. And, you know, with the Total Divas show and whatnot. So
she shouldn't. She should change what the Divas division is. She should make it the woman's division. She should come in there like Ronda Rousey came into mixed martial arts and change everything.
Exactly. Like, she's the daughter of Ric Flair, so you obviously have to go with that in some capacity. But, like, she's a specimen. She's an athletic freak, and she's going to school all of those girls on television right now. And it's a shame that they value appearance more than just the fact if they can go in the ring. By the way, before we like get off the entire NXT thing here.
Oh, no, we got more to go on.
We got more to go through. I can't wait to bury one of the matches on this card. But
well, there were two that you could, so...
There are two, yeah.
We'll be interested to hear which one offended Walder more. But let's carry on with the conversation with Charlotte. I think that's how you do it. Charlotte has to come in and be the Ronda Rousey for women's wrestling in the WWE. Will that happen? I don't know.
Hey, well, Paige was supposed to do that too, but look, she ended up on Total Divas.
Yeah, but
as well,
she,
right?
But there was a thing with Paige, and Paige still, even though she's on the Total Divas, I don't consider her one of them. I mean, she's barely on the show,
right?
Like, she really doesn't have a big role on the show. I mean, I've watched like I think 6 or 7 of the episodes. I don't know how many they've done this year, but I think I'm up to date on them, and she's had a very small role on the show.
There's too many of them, James. Cut them down, or just cut them out completely.
I don't think they've been trying to make those two shows meet together, and I don't think they need to, because I really don't think they get the crossover audience that they are hoping to get from this. I don't think people that watch Total Divas, quite frankly, watch Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely one of those people. Keep me away from the reality shows and the Rosa Mendezes of the world.
What did Rosa Mendez do on the last?
Just everything.
Total
just
Divas. I'll think about it. I'll try and tell you later, Walder.
Thank you. Thank
anyway, back to business here down at the NXT show, where there are no Total Divas. Only crazy fans attacking Tyler Breeze. Did you hear the backstory about that, Chris Walder?
Well, I read it was the girl was like a former Hooters waitress, and she's in developmental right now. Is there anything more to that?
I don't know. She's in developmental? The Hooters girl?
I
did not know that part. I knew it was a Hooters girl.
Well, of course she was going to be.
Oh my gosh!
From the brand, you think they're going to bring somebody in? From
oh
the outside?
Man, has John Laurinaitis taken over talent relations again? Is that what's happened?
She was a good-looking girl, at least.
That's what I mean. John Laurinaitis, he tend to book with looks in mind and not talent.
Right.
So, anyway, Tyler Breeze did fight Hideo Itami. I'm assuming that is not the match that you have the problem with.
No, it was for an opener, it was really good. So, all respect to those two guys. I like the selfie stick by Tyler Breeze. That's a nice touch. I made a joke on Twitter about that, about a certain scandal that happened this week, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, that's way after we talk with Tommaso Ciampa and all that.
It's just foreshadowing. That's all I'm doing.
A lot of scandal and Twitter warfare going on. We're not going to talk much about Raw on this program, by the way, folks, because there simply won't be time. That being said, I thought a good match for both guys, and I thought both guys needed a good match. Because I think Itami has not been the great sensation that Finn Balor has been, Kevin Owens has been, and I think he's clearly the third in that race and lagging behind, quite frankly. Why they keep having him tease the GTS, I'm a little confused about. If he's going to do it, have him do it. I thought he should have done it last night, quite frankly.
Yeah, the crowd would have gone nuts for that.
Well, they would have either hated it or gone nuts, but at least it's out there. I think the fact they keep teasing it is a wrong thing. I think you're either going with it or you're not. Decide.
Yeah, he needs to bust it out. I don't think the fans would hate it. I mean, he came up with the move originally. Punk took it from him. So why
in NXT, I agree with you. At Full Sail, they're not. On the main roster, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, the main roster, people might have an issue with it. In NXT, people will just go crazy for it.
They want it to happen in NXT. Like, they're clamoring for him to do the move.
Exactly.
But the other thing that was brought up, and I think it's a valid point, a guy who's smaller than Punk and in this land of giants probably can't put that GTS on everybody that he's going to face. So by that whole definition of they always have that rule in WWE, a finisher should always be something you can put on the big show as easy as you can put it on Rey Mysterio. Clearly, he can't do that with the GTS.
Well, it would just be kind of a cool attraction. His finishing move is that running kick, so he can continue with that.
Yeah, he lost his running knee to Daniel Bryan. I mean,
yeah.
They have really kind of handcuffed Itami in some ways. It's funny because my biggest concern for Kevin Owens coming in was, oh my, what is he going to do with his moveset? I mean, all his moves, he can't do them. Can't do the F5, can't do, like, the crossface. I don't even know if they'll let him do the cannonball. It turned out they did let him do the cannonball, but I was like,
and the
what?
Package pile driver, too.
Yeah, the package pile driver. I was like, what's Kevin going to do with his moveset? Kevin's doing just fine. He's found a way. Hideo Itami, not so much.
Well, of course it was going to take Itami a little bit longer to kind of adapt to the American style of wrestling and just working with WWE as a whole. So, and they voiced their concerns. I mean, Triple H even mentioned that, you know, he's moving along a little bit slower, but he's going to come around. And his spot is totally secure just because of the relationships they can do with Japan and, you know, him being one of their bigger stars. So, you know, he'll have a job for life if he wants it.
Yeah, because Jimmy Wang Yang is gone.
Exactly. Are there no other Japanese guys right now on the roster? Probably not.
No, I don't think so. I think Itami is it.
Exactly.
There's not a lot of diversity on this roster. I mean, there is a growing problem, they say, looking for that next Latino star. I don't think it's going to be Sin Cara.
No.
And I don't think it's going to be Kalisto. And that'll lead us into our next match, the tag team championship match with those two. Boy, they're just happy to be there. Baby faces, Blake and Murphy. They got tights that look kind of like Strike Force back in the day or something. I don't know what the heck's going on there. But they're excited to be there. And Sin Cara and Kalisto are excited to botch spots during this match. What a just terrible match this was.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Sin Cara, the original, must be back because Sin Cara's botching again. It was hilarious.
He's still got the tattoo. It's the new Sin Cara. It's just the same kind of results.
I know. It's a joke. I know. I'm just saying. But the match. It wasn't terrible. I mean,
I disagree. I thought it was totally terrible. I hated it.
I think it was, there was another match that was worse than this, but I think it was average. I'm not a fan of Blake and Murphy. I think they're extremely generic. They need a tag team name. They can't just keep going by Blake and Murphy. It's so awful. And their looks as a whole, they're wearing tights. that makes you think that they're Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, like with the claws going through it and whatnot. And they quite possibly have the worst entrance music in the history of wrestling, and that's saying something because I've listened to Cesaro's about 100 times.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, not a lot going on right, and the depth in that tag team division is poor.
Well, I won't spoil it, but their next feud might reinvigorate them, so we'll see.
Who knows? I highly doubt it.
Well, you'll see.
No, well, I won't see.
You definitely have not heard about what's going on in NXT, have you?
No, I'm not. Well, I heard some older dinosaur-like creature might be back there, but that's the only spoiler that I have seen.
And another one.
Oh, more than one. Oh, that's more than exciting. One. That's exciting. The dinosaurs are coming to take over NXT. I'm very excited.
Pretty much, yeah.
Before the dinosaurs attack, maybe perhaps the first two people they should go after are the men in one of the tamest no-disqualification matches I have seen in the history of professional wrestling. I believe we busted out a steel chair at about the 10-minute mark, and that was really about the only sense that I got that this was a no-disqualification match. Aside from that, it was a lumbering botch fest between two guys that really looked terrible.
It sucked.
By the way, we're talking about Baron Corbin and Bull Dempsey, if you didn't know.
I like the build. I mean, at least they tried to get a story out of these two, but I mean, again, like you said, it was no disqualification. There wasn't really any no disqualification elements outside of the steel chair that they brought in, but Baron Corbin caught Dempsey, gave him the end of days, and then he sat in the chair to pose after the match was over.
Which made no sense either.
Yeah, exactly.
On top of everything else, that made no sense either.
Like, this just goes to show that as much, you know, hype as there is right now in Baron Corbin, he still has a ways to go, and this was one of the first. You know, he's had a couple before, but one of the first few matches, like, it actually went longer than a couple of minutes, and the fans aren't counting down.
And he looked gassed as a result of it, too.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He obviously has to build up his cardio because he hasn't been put in these situations before. But I still think the sky's the limit for him, and I think WWE has a lot of faith that he can eventually be something really important. But for now, I mean, his stock is really low because that match with Dempsey was just brutal.
It was awful. I mean, He had a first. I've never seen a man clothesline himself out of the ring.
Is that what happened?
There was a spot between him and Dempsey that was just it was just bizarro, the whole thing. He goes to clothesline Dempsey, and the idea is I think both were supposed to go out of the ring, and Corbin would land on his feet, Dempsey would hit the deck. What ended up happening was Dempsey did not go out. Corbin went over, landed on his feet, kind of. And then Dempsey, by the mysterious man that must have followed Corbin, went flying over. He kind of looked like Mizdow doing his bit and ended up on the ground. It was awful.
Yeah, let's stop giving this match any more time. It was the worst match of a really, really good card. Surprisingly, you know, it was those kinds of matches that made people say, well, this might be the worst NXT TakeOver show they've ever done, and I completely beg to differ. As bad as Dempsey versus Corbin was, it wasn't enough to shame what, you know, the final three matches that we're going to be definitely talking about at the end of the year as Match of the Year candidates.
Mojo Rawley was on an NXT special. I don't want to hear anything about anything. That guy, in fact, that should be the next feud for Bull Dempsey. Mojo Rawley, loser leaves developmental match. I would love to see that.
Well, they had a little feud there for a bit. They were tag teaming for a while.
Oh, that's right. They had that. Okay, then Corbin.
Fine.
Loser
leaves
developmental. And then we can get rid of, Mojo, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, overall, I thought it was a great show. I mean, the only thing you can say about the two matches that were bad, they weren't long. So, I mean, like, it wasn't like you had to endure much with them.
It's Fastlane next weekend is going to have a lot to catch up to because I think this show, again, those final three matches, Balor, Neville, the women's title, and then and Owens and Zayn, like, come on. Like, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I mean, compare the main event to what we're going to get with Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, I think, no question, you're going to get a better match. You've seen the better match already. The women's
50% of that Bryan Reigns match might be enjoyable, but the other half of the...
Yeah, the women's title match, we have Nikki Bella versus Paige. My money's on the four-way. I mean, you name it. Go up and down the card. I just think, you know, John Cena versus Rusev, Finn Balor versus Neville, I'll take that over those two. I mean, NXT is just, they're knocking it out of the park, and they're challenging these guys on the main roster to, you know, like, show us something, show a pulse.
I reported over at WrestlingRumors.net, key plug there, that Triple H is actually forming his own clique down in NXT with four guys that who he thinks are going to be huge stars on the main roster, and he's kind of keeping them under his wing, and if they're getting a little bit more special treatment, you know, what have you, with Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, and Hideo Itami. It was kind of surprising to not hear Adrian Neville's name in that group, but, I mean, a lot of people think that he might be the weakest when it comes to the main roster, especially if they saddle him with that Mighty Mouse gimmick.
No, the NXT 5, there is a fifth now, and it's not Adrian Neville.
Well, who is it?
Charlotte.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah, I mean, all this talk about Charlotte, here's the bottom line to all of this. People can speculate and say whatever the heck they want. There's no one in this world Triple H respects more and loves more than Ric Flair. Maybe Shawn Michaels, maybe his wife Stephanie. Aside from those two people, probably not anybody else. There is no way in hell Triple H is going to let them screw up Charlotte Flair. It's not going to happen.
Because he'll be hearing it from the old man, that's why.
Well, yeah, but like that's what I mean. He cares so much about Ric Flair that he will go to bat with Vince and fight over Charlotte Flair. I'm not sure how much he loves Sammy or Kevin or anybody else, but I do know there's no question he will fight for Charlotte Flair on the main roster.
And one final point, I can't wait until Triple H takes over this entire train, man. He needs to be running the show because I have more faith in him to use the abilities of some of these NXT guys because we're all scared, you know, when they come up from developmental and they get put in Vince McMahon's hands, it could turn out to be a disaster. So Triple H, just take over the whole show, buddy.
And maybe he's scared too because, like, we haven't seen too many people coming out of that developmental system right now. Although he claims otherwise, like there's kind of this mentality among fans of, you know, this fear and wanting people to stay in that NXT cocoon and not go up there until, you know, there's a way where it can be safer for them. But
well, he said he wants to build it as like a third brand and, you know, take the show on the road and make it kind of like a competition for Raw and SmackDown. So if that's the case, then he should keep everyone down there.
And they are going to Cleveland. They're going to be touring in Cleveland, and they're going someplace else, which slips my mind at the moment. But it definitely is changing and growing, and, you know, it's looking like, you know, systems are all systems go down at NXT. They keep coming up with ways to keep that product exciting, and you know, even though we joked around about in the spoilers about, you know, some dinosaurs coming back, I saw on Twitter the people were excited about it. I'm not personally, but the people that like that show were excited about this stuff. So Triple H seems to know what his audience wants. Vince McMahon, that's another issue. We'll get to that in a little bit, but we're going to turn the page. We'll get back to WWE in a little while, but now we're going to turn the page to Ring of Honor, who they are the next ones with a big event coming up. It is the 13th anniversary show going down live on pay-per-view March the 1st from Las Vegas, Nevada. That's a heck of a place to have a pay-per-view. That's not bad, eh, Walter? A
little bit of gambling, some strippers, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, that's good thing to say before Vegas. Valentine's Day with the girlfriend and all that. Yeah, good job there, Walter.
Love you, Jen.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently he would love you if he had tickets to go see ROH in Las Vegas. Apparently that would be, you know, a night on the town with Walder.
Hey, is it some ROH, some Celine Dion? I mean, that's how I roll.
Celine Dion!
Hey, we're Canadian, man. We got to support our girl.
No, I don't have to support Celine Dion. I will support Maria Kanellis Bennett, who is on the new poster that's promoting the event. She looks lovely.
Beautiful as always.
Yeah, the wife of one Michael Bennett. And speaking of the Kingdom, they are now all over this card because the card has added some matches. So we have a whole list of matches to go through. So maybe we'll do that after we hear from a man who will be in the main event. Tommaso Ciampa will be battling for that ROH title with Jay Briscoe, with Michael Elgin, and Warbeard Hansen. This is, as I say in the interview, this is going to be a Smash Mouth match. I mean, I don't know what to make of these four in a match together. It's going to be hard hitting, Chris Walder. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, but of course, our boy, the Sicilian psychopath Tommaso Ciampa, is going to be in there. And let's hear your interview.
At this time, we start to gear up when Ring of Honor's got a pay-per-view coming up. And they have one coming up, a big one. The 13th anniversary show going down live in Las Vegas. One of the men in the main event for that very pay-per-view is with us now, and it is Tommaso Ciampa who will be challenging for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship currently held by Jay Briscoe. Welcome, Tommaso.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we get into the pay-per-view and all that, I wanted to touch on a couple things from the past with you. One of that being, this has been a big week for one Kevin Steen / Kevin Owens, and you were one of the guys who Kevin handpicked as one of the matches when he was going out of Ring of Honor and moving on to NXT. What did that mean to you to be one of the guys that he wanted to finish up his run in Ring of Honor with?
Yeah, you know, Kevin and I, for whatever reason, we just really clicked right from the gate. You know, once we met each other, started to do a lot of shows together with Ring of Honor and whatnot. It wasn't too much of a surprise to me, just due to the fact that we had talked for, you know, years at that point about how we never got to wrestle each other. It just never seemed to line itself up. But it was still such a cool honor. You know, Kevin's one of those guys who's really helped me along quite a bit, I'd have to say, in my career. He was a big influence in getting me a shot with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. And then, you know, like you just said, picking me as one of his last opponents in Ring of Honor was something that was real memorable for me. And just watching him and his success now is just, I mean, even knowing how talented he is and how talented he was in Ring of Honor, it's mind-blowing to see anybody walk into the WWE universe and just take it by storm the way he has. I just can't remember ever seeing a guy debut the way he has and just catching on fire so quick.
Yeah, it's just amazing, isn't it? I mean, it kind of blows your mind. It's really something. You had your stint with the WWE, but when they had the OVW system, is there some sense of, man, if only the timing was different and you could be part of that vibe they have going down there in Florida right now? Because it seems like night and day from what people say.
Yeah, I wouldn't really say that there's any regrets or that. It's just, like you said, it's just a different era, you know? At the time that I was signed, I was 21 and ill prepared, and even if I was placed in NXT instead of OVW at that time, I would have probably failed miserably. You know, I just sorry, I'm putting pans away. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared physically, mentally, emotionally, anything. It's just you know, like now, I'd like to think that if I was in NXT at this stage of my career or in OVW at this stage of my career, that I would have a much different outcome. But that's just because I've had the opportunity over the last, you know, 8-9 years on the independent scene in Ring of Honor, PWG, to really develop as a talent. So it's great to see what's going on in NXT. I'm happy for all my friends that are there, you know, and if one day that's meant for me, that's cool. But right now I'm really, really happy and really enjoying my time at Ring of Honor.
And in Ring of Honor, you had a run with the television title. How did you feel about that run with the belt? Were you happy with it, or was there anything that you would change, or what did you learn from it, I guess?
No, I was fairly disappointed in it, to be honest with you. I was happy with the night I won it. You know, I felt like it was really magical in so many ways. It kind of had that Ultimate Warrior feel to it, you know, defeating Matt Taven and the House Truth in record time, and the feel in New York City. Everything about that night was really, really awesome. I was really hoping that winning the television title, I'd be able to, I guess, kind of increase its value, kind of bring it to a different level. My goal was to take on a lot of fresh competitors, guys like ACH, Cedric Alexander, and have fresh matchups that haven't been seen before, and really elevate the title to a different level of competition. But it just didn't really work out that way. You know, I was kind of tied into all these different three-way matches for a while, and I guess it just never kind of caught on. It never got going. And, you know, now I watch what Jay Lethal, with his second reign, has been doing with the title. And he's basically been doing a lot of the stuff that I was hoping to do when I had my run. You know, he's having these fresh matchups, defending it recently versus Roddy and ACH and Cedric Alexander. And he's going on now to face Alberto El Patron, which will be a classic, no doubt. So I don't know if it's regrets, really, for me. It's just it was circumstance, you know. It was what it was. I feel like now, more so than then, I'm prepared to take the world title and kind of transcend that and hopefully learn from the mistakes maybe that I've made with the television title and capitalize on certain things and, you know, speak up for myself when need be to kind of make it mean a little bit more than the television title did at the time.
Yeah, it's funny. We had Jay on before Final Battle, and I had mentioned to Jay, Jay really seemed like he was almost talking like the idea of elevating that title to the point of he wanted to make it kind of like, well, I should be the number one contender. I should be the guy fighting Jay Briscoe. Obviously, he's not for this pay-per-view, but he's put that out there, and I think it's been good for that title as a whole.
Yeah, I think, you know, all of us guys, we came up in the same era as far as being fans of wrestling, and when we were little, the Intercontinental title in WWF was meaningful. You know, it basically, the guys who were feuding over that title, you could kind of bet money that in a matter of 1-3 years, those same guys were going to be feuding for the world title. And it was kind of like a proving ground for people. And so I think my whole generation, we like that idea. We like that scheme of tier status, you know, and it's natural for anybody, myself, Jay Lethal, or any other guy to hold on to a second title like the television title and say, well, hey, I want to make this more than what it is right now, you know. And Jay's done a great job with it. He really has. I feel like right now he's kind of hit his stride as a performer. Putting all of our differences aside, he's just extremely talented, and he's putting on some really entertaining matches lately.
And then you mentioned you worked a lot of three-way matches. Well, now you're in a four-way match for the World Heavyweight or the ROH Heavyweight Championship. What are the challenges in working matches like that? Because I know, famously, Steve Austin always says how he hated working three-way matches and all that. It's a different challenge than a one-on-one match, obviously.
Yeah, you know, everyone has their preference. I guess I would fall in the same category as Steve Austin on that one, where I love the idea of singles matches. I feel like you're not relying on anyone. There's less variables. But, you know, you kind of do what you're told or try to succeed in the position you're put in. And in this scenario, it's a four-way, so you kind of just deal with the cards that you've been dealt. And the biggest difference is really, especially in this scenario where it's not elimination, is you don't have to be pinned or submitted to lose this match and to lose your shot at winning the world title. So it's almost like you have to be a little bit more on the defensive than the norm, you know, especially for a guy like myself. I'm pretty smash mouth. I tend to come right after my opponents, and I like to put my opponent on the defense. In this scenario, you have to have, you know, your eyes and your head going left and right at all times, and you have to make sure you're aware of what's going on inside the ring. So that's going to be the biggest difference, is just being aware at all times of where every single guy in the match is, you know, not getting wrapped up with one man at any given time.
And you mentioned your style. I mean, everyone in this match is like a bruising brute of a wrestler. I mean, you have Jay Briscoe, who went through a war with Adam Cole, and unfortunately Adam's hurt right now based on his match with Jay. And then you got Michael Elgin, who you faced at Final Battle. I thought had a great match with him. And then Warbeard, who's the newest kid on the block, so to speak, but probably the biggest guy in this match as well. It screams like it's going to be a smash mouth, drag him out affair between the four of you.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely what I'm expecting, and I'd be willing to bet that that's what they're expecting too. I don't think it's going to be much of a match for endurance, or where I don't know if the physicality is going to play too much of a factor, just for the sheer fact that every guy, like you said, is a physical guy. Every guy dishes out a beating and takes a beating and has proven themselves. They've proven their toughness, you know. Myself fighting through an ACL surgery, and you know, I know Michael Elgin just recently had a stinger, and you know, you watch back that match that he had, and you would have no idea that he had a stinger match. You know, it's like his pain threshold is just on a different level, and I know Hansen very well. You know, we came up together in the business, and here's a guy who's had shoulder surgery, he's had a broken back, he's still standing, and no one has to ever speak for Jay Briscoe's toughness, and he's one of the toughest guys in the business. So I don't know that it's going to be a matter of toughness. It's going to be a matter of being in the right place at the right time, and like I said, kind of having your eyes everywhere and being aware. I think the guy who has the best ring awareness and who's mentally prepared the most for this match is the guy who's going to walk out with the title.
And what has it been like? This will be the third time for Ring of Honor going to pay-per-view, getting that bigger spotlight. Has it changed how you approach the day-to-day with Ring of Honor now that there's always this big event to look forward to now, where it's kind of more mapped out, like there's a pay-per-view here, there's a pay-per-view here, there's a pay-per-view there, and these, just by the nature of them, are bigger events, not just in terms of the scale of matches, but for what it means to the company and what it means for the individuals taking part in all the matches?
I wouldn't say it changes the day-to-day approach, but it definitely has a different feel to it. I spoke to somebody earlier this week, and I was talking about that first pay-per-view and walking into the building and seeing the setup, and you know, they were kind of doing some mic checks and sound checks earlier in the night, they're playing a video package that was going to be aired later on, and it didn't matter if you were next to your friend or your enemy or whatever, everyone kind of paused whatever they were doing, and eyes were all on that screen, and it was like that energy in that room was just on a different level. And I mean, every single Ring of Honor show, it has a different feel to it. But the pay-per-view shows, I mean, it's something special. You could tell what it is really, I mean, you have a roster full of guys who wrestling is their passion. That's their art form, you know? And all of a sudden you're saying to them, hey, not only is this going to be seen by the live audience or a stream on iPay-per-view, this is going to be something where your parents can sit at home and order it on TV, and this can be seen worldwide. And it's like, it just brings out the very best in everybody. So that's kind of the feel when you go into something like March 1st on pay-per-view in Las Vegas. It's like, I mean, shoot, it's Las Vegas for starters, pay-per-view, Ring of Honor, world title. It's like everything is lined up for you to be like, okay, you're on your A-game. You're dieting, you're tanning, you're working out, you're studying film. You know, there's no doubt that every single guy walking in that building that night is going to be ready to show the world exactly how good they are.
Yeah, and that was something, the very first pay-per-view we had Matt Taven on before it, and he was saying that very thing you said about your parents being able to watch and family, and his family where he lived doesn't get Ring of Honor, so it was like the first time that it was easy for them to see him and stuff like that. That's got to be a huge thrill.
Yeah, you know, it's a different feel, and for me, like, the first pay-per-view, I was the opening match, and in a match that, while it was an entertaining match, it wasn't a very well-hyped match, you know, just kind of the way it landed, and going from that pay-per-view to the third pay-per-view and having a match that's highly regarded and talked about constantly, promoted constantly, and for the world title, I mean, it brings a whole different meaning for myself personally for the pay-per-view, because it's like, and that's something as a kid you think about, you know, and I guess on your vision board, that's one of those things that goes up there. It's like, hey, I want a main event, a pay-per-view, and all of a sudden here you are, and it's weeks away, and it's real, you know, and if it's not going away, it's a real thing that's going to happen, and now it's just a matter of time, and it's exciting, man.
Yeah, it really has been basically the whole entire year for Ring of Honor. It's been an exciting year for this company. The relationship you guys have built with New Japan Pro Wrestling, I was there in Toronto for that event, and then the event in New York City, and the plans are to do that again this year. And what has it been like to be a part of this company over the past year? Because it really seems like there's been a huge growth in the spectrum that is Ring of Honor.
Right, yeah, and it's an exciting time. It's one of those times where you want to stay healthy and you want to, you know, stay positive and work hard and just stay in your game, because, like you said, you don't know what opportunity might come when and how grand that opportunity may be, you know, whether it's pay-per-view or something with New Japan or something that hasn't even quite happened yet. You know, just in November, doing the stuff with England was awesome at Preston City. There's so many awesome opportunities that have been coming up, and it sounds like, you know, just from the rumblings you hear, that this year is going to be another milestone year for the company. And it's growing, and it feels like at a good pace. It doesn't feel like we are overstepping our boundaries. It doesn't feel like we're reaching beyond our fingertips or anything. I feel like we're growing steadily at a pace that we can sustain and continue to do well, both, you know, economically and with our numbers and ratings and ticket sales, as well as for the talent to flourish and be able to showcase their skills.
Yeah, and it really seems like it's been a team atmosphere that's made that happen. I know we've had Adam Cole on a couple times, and he talks about that team atmosphere that goes on in that locker room and everyone working together. And you really see that at times with this company. And it's a really interesting time in wrestling where it's kind of wide open for, like, there used to be a clear definition where there was WWE, there was WCW, and there was everyone else. I think now it's WWE, and everybody else is just out there scrambling to get the attention of wrestling fans who might not be that happy with the WWE right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a different time as far as places where you can make money or make a living. And I think that's kind of the biggest separation over the last 2-3 years that I've seen in Ring of Honor is, I think a lot of people a few years ago would have classified it as an indie. And I don't think there's many people who classify it that way anymore, between TV, pay-per-view, and even contracts. I mean, you're seeing now guys all of a sudden who are working solely for Ring of Honor and who are making a living off of it. And that's a good sign, you know, that's a great sign. That's a great sign, not just for our roster, but just for the industry in general, you know, and looking at places like Lucha Underground and stuff. Like, there's becoming places to work and to get noticed and to get exposure that aren't WWE, and that's great. You know, anytime more places pop up that do well, it's better for the boys, it's better for the fans, it's just better for the business in general.
No, I agree wholeheartedly, and you know, it's interesting. I had heard another interview said that you were working on getting a contract with Ring of Honor, and that's great to hear that you're committed and going to be around for the long haul. It's interesting. Are you still on, like, super secret probation or whatever you were on there, where you were going a little crazy there?
No, well, yes and no. There's a zero tolerance policy, you know, and it's, I don't know if it's considered probation. I guess that'd be another term for it. Essentially, it's I can't lay my hands on any officials, security, or announcers, etc., on purpose, you know, and I guess that would be deemed by Nigel one way or the other. So that's always a factor, too. You know, I don't know how in tune you've been to the past couple months of watching, whether it be house show VODs or television. It's actually kind of been a thing, because with the four of us, a lot of times tempers get the best of you and brawls pursue and whatnot. And anytime brawls pursue like that, security tends to come out, referees tend to come out, and where Hansen and Elgin and Briscoe kind of have free reign, I don't. So the second, you know, officials start to make their way to the ring, I kind of have to depart the scene. So it's made things a little bit interesting for me. I've kind of learned to cope with it better. So I don't see it being a factor going forward. But I guess in wrestling, you just never know.
No, just because I know it was a factor in your match with Michael Elgin, but I don't remember seeing much of it in Ring of Honor television since. So I wondered if that was still a factor for you.
Right, I think that's more a matter of just it not happening. I think if it had happened, it would have been made an issue. But you know, Nigel addressed the situation the first television taping of this year in Nashville, and essentially it was, there's still a zero tolerance policy, but the wording of it is a little bit different. It's no longer if I put my hands on an official that I'm out. It's now that it has to be with intent. So I think that's been the biggest difference maker, is that I've been able to stay clear of intentionally putting my hands on any officials. So it's kind of probably gone a little bit by the wayside, especially when you bring a world title into the picture. I would assume commentary and whatnot is more concerned in talking a little bit more about the world title picture as opposed to whether or not I'm going to put my hands on an official.
Yeah, because you were going on a run there. You were going after everybody, including the only one that upset me. You went after the Young Bucks. I was not happy about that.
Yeah, you know, that was nothing personal. The whole thing hasn't been personal. The whole thing is a matter of being in the company for 5 years, being wrestling for 10 years, and never being treated as a main event. And that's not even just in Ring of Honor. I mean, that's in general. So the whole Young Buck issue in Toronto, I mean, they were the main event, and they were closing up the show, and I wasn't even on the show. So that was kind of my issue there. It had nothing to do with the Young Bucks. It was kind of like wrong place, wrong time. But that's been my issue all along. It's been a constant. I think what I've been able to harness over the last couple months and going into this pay-per-view is been able to redirect my energy a little bit and focus a little bit more on the task at hand. If I win the world title, the company has no choice but to make me a main event player. And that's really my goal. My goal is to be the guy. I want to be the guy who is doing all the interviews and PR and press and main eventing shows and being announced on the website. I want that exposure. I want to be, when people think Ring of Honor, I want them to think Tommaso Ciampa.
And one of the things you did, which I thought was great, a while back when Adam Cole was the champion, you had a match with him, and it was prior to, I believe, the first pay-per-view, and you took great offense to the fact that they were promoting the pay-per-view match with Adam Cole as the champion when you had a title shot that came before that. And I thought that was something that was really brilliant, and I thought, you know, more people should do that with Ring of Honor, because so oftentimes there is matches that are booked prior to these pay-per-views, and it's almost, they seem like a foregone conclusion. You made that match with Adam Cole interesting, just in the sense by bringing up the point of, hey, what about me?
Yeah, you know, in wrestling, since I've ever followed it, it's always been card subject to change, and essentially, that was the point I was trying to get across. And it's the point I still try to get across, because I understand that on a marketing side, there has to be promotional material put out for upcoming shows, and you're going to clearly probably put your champion, current champion, on those upcoming show promotional materials, and then in hopes that, you know, he keeps the title and you don't lose money on wasted advertisement. So I understand why it was done, but it doesn't change the fact that it kind of grinds me a little bit. And it still bothers me to this day when, you know, Ring of Honor announces that they're going to a new town or whatnot. And, you know, of course, Jay Briscoe and Jay Lethal, the champions, and Red Dragon are listed. And then there's some other names like Michael Elgin's and whatnot listed. And oftentimes they're not. I'm not listed. And that kind of aids into my grief with the company at times, and with Nigel and with the powers to be of, hey, what the hell do I have to do to get your attention? And, you know, if roughhousing a little bit got attention, then great, mission accomplished. Now it's all on me. You know, the opportunity has finally presented itself in Las Vegas, and it's up to me to rise to the occasion and do what I've set out to do.
Well, you know what? We wish you nothing but luck. As long as you promise, don't go after the Young Bucks anymore. They are one of my favorites. I felt like they got left to slaughter by you. And actually, it was quite a moment. I was at that show, and when you came out, no one expected that coming. But leave the Young Bucks alone, please.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's a team, I'll be honest with you, I would love to actually have a match with at some point. I mean, I don't know when or where down the line it would happen, but that is a team that I would love to get in there with.
Yeah, they are something. They are a phenomenal tag team that has really taken tag team wrestling, I think, to a whole new level, as well as Red Dragon in ROH as well. The both of them are going to go at it on this card as well. For, I don't know, the umpteenth time. And it's funny, we were talking about that matchup on our podcast a week or two ago, and I said, you know what, Red Dragon, Young Bucks, I could watch that 100 times and it would never get boring.
Yeah, right, it's a match you never get sick of, and there's certain matches that do that to you, and that's just one of those ones. It's kind of like a match for the ages. You can watch it over and over, and the creativity and the competitive edge of the guys, they're always bringing out new stuff, and it's awesome to see. It's been a fun time watching them.
Yeah, they are great. You do a great job as well, and we wish you luck in your world title match coming up in Las Vegas on March the 1st, and all the best to you, and you know, good luck with everything, and hopefully things work out and you get that contract all sealed away, and you are a bigger and brighter part of Ring of Honor.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for your time.
This is Kyle O'Reilly, one half of the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. You're listening to Condo on the Moon podcast. Keep it real.
Alrighty, there he was, Tommaso Ciampa, on the program for the first time. And did you notice, Chris Walder, I scolded him for going after the Young Bucks. That was not right. We saw that live. That was a terrible thing Tommaso did.
Well, you obviously didn't fill him in on the rules of this podcast that no negativity will be thrown towards Matt and Nick.
That's right. You can't. Well, no. Obviously, I had him on the podcast, so it's not like you can't like compete against the Young Bucks. We had one of the Red Dragon on for gosh sakes. We had Kyle O'Reilly on the show. It's just he attacked them maliciously. I was not down with that.
Well, they're still our favorites, Young Bucks. You know, IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions, but everyone
soon
can't
to
love
be
them.
Two-time champions, like two belts again. We're doing it all over.
Champions of the universe.
Yeah, they had to get rid of the belts because they might have gone to WWE, but that's all done now. So we're getting all our belts back. That's what we're doing in Young Buck Land.
Nice.
But no, seriously, with this card, it's had a major addition, and we mentioned the Bucks, who are part of the Bullet Club and part of New Japan. They are a big influence on this card coming up in Las Vegas, and with no Adam Cole on this card because of Adam Cole's injury, I thought a nice little adjustment by ROH with bringing in a lot of the Bullet Club guys to be a part of this show. We mentioned the Bucks. They are taking on Red Dragon. As I said with Tommaso, I could watch that match 100 times over. I said it on this podcast a couple weeks ago. These four guys, put them in a ring. It'll be a great match.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. It's going to be physical. And I think all four of their styles, which are actually kind of similar when you think about it, it's going to make for one hell of a main event.
AJ Styles, once again, your IWGP heavyweight champion. He is taking on ACH. Huge match for ACH. I think there's no pressure on Styles. All the pressure's on ACH. This is a huge match for him.
Well, he's going up against the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. This might be the biggest match of his career to date. And, you know, obviously they feel like he could be something great for them. So putting him against AJ Styles on the 13th anniversary show, can't wait to see it.
And just added to the card, I think within the last day or two, we have one heck of a three-way tag team match. We have The Addiction, which is Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. We have, from the Bullet Club, and one of my favorite podcasts, it is Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows from Bullet Club. They, of course, do Talk and Shop over there on MLW Radio. A great fine program that is about absolutely nothing other than making you laugh. And also, other friends of mine, The Kingdom, Matt Taven, who's been on this program, Michael Bennett, who has been on this program and may be on this program again soon, they will be in action in a three-way tag team match that should knock the socks off of everything. I mean, Red Dragon and Young Bucks will be fantastic, but these three tag teams are not exactly chopped liver. It'll be a great match.
Well, Gallows and Anderson won back the tag titles, correct?
They have. In fact, the Bullet Club, we have Kenny Omega with the IWGP Junior Championship. The Bucks have the tag titles. AJ's got back the heavyweight title. And, the senior tag team titles, Anderson and Gallows have those back.
So one of the few belts that they don't have is the Intercontinental Championship, so
yeah,
put it on Fale or
Nakamura,
something.
Nakamura, he's the only guy who can stand up to the Bullet Club here. But he will not be there, although maybe he'll be there in May, Walter. I can only hope. Because they're doing that again where the full invasion of New Japan happens in Toronto and probably New York City. But for now, we have this card, the 13th anniversary card. As we mentioned a couple times, the world title match, a four-way with Tommaso Ciampa, Michael Elgin, Hansen, and champion Jay Briscoe. What we haven't mentioned yet, Jay Lethal, the television champion, taking on the formerly known as Alberto Del Rio, now known as Alberto Patron, for the ROH television title. That should be a great match.
Any chance we see a title change here? Lethal's held that belt for quite a while.
I don't think so, because Alberto's just floating around everywhere and trying to make money. So, like, just based on the behind-the-scenes stuff, I say no. In a straight-up wrestling match, I would say, you know, it's a pick'em. I would say anyone has a chance in that match. But, you know, who knows? Stranger things have happened. I've learned my lesson. If Kevin Steen / Owens can walk into NXT and win the title in 2 months, truly anything's possible.
That's going to be the benchmark for everything we talk about now. Well, if Kevin Owens can win the belt in 2 months, then anyone can beat anybody.
That's right. If you can trade Wayne Gretzky, then you can trade anyone, right?
Exactly.
That's the classic Canadian lineup here. If you're not Canadian, you might not be as familiar with that expression, but that is the go-to sports caster expression up here in Canada. If they can trade Wayne Gretzky, anyone can be traded.
Step up your NHL game, listeners.
Hey, not me. I haven't watched the NHL since 2004, buddy.
Hey, I'm with you too, man, but I'm just saying, we need someone to be a hockey expert around here.
No, we don't. I mean, what? The Leafs have won 2 games in the last 2 months for your Toronto City there.
Yeah.
It's not looking too good. Anyway, let's finish up this card. We also have Roderick Strong, former member of the Decade. I want to say Addiction, but it's actually the Decade. And he is taking on BJ Whitmer in a grudge match, which I'm sure will have Jimmy Jacobs and former guest of the program Adam Page around somewhere. Because they would have to be involved somehow, I would imagine. Those two are going at it in a singles match. But perhaps the most exciting, most interesting match of the night for me, the lovely and talented Maria Kanellis, with her husband Michael Bennett in her corner, will be taking on ODB from the old TNAs with Mark Briscoe in her corner. My God, how is Maria going to survive?
Oh, Maria's going to get destroyed, but we're not going to go into TNA here.
Maria might be a guest on this program. We're working on that, so, you know. Enough with the Maria getting destroyed stuff.
I'm all on the ODB bandwagon, okay? I'll tell that to Maria, too.
Well, no, you won't, because you're not doing the interview, but that's beside the point.
Not with that attitude.
Well, you're going to tell her she's going to get destroyed. It's definitely not happening.
Nah, I love you, Maria.
No, you don't.
I'm just more ODB, that's all. One dirty Briscoe, right?
Yeah, that was pretty cute how ROH pulled that off. I enjoyed that.
Hey, it's an easy transition.
It is very cute, and, you know, it is what it is. I mean, JR, I don't think, is ever going to get his dream where JR thinks that TNA and ROH should sing Kumbaya and work together. I don't think that's ever happened.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, that's one of JR's things on his podcast. He's always about TNA and ROH should work together and da-da-da-da-da. It's never going to happen.
Nope.
Nope. They are just not going to come together as companies, and Dixie is not going to embrace Joe Koff. It won't happen.
I dig the optimism, though.
Well, you know, that's JR. He doesn't have a dog in the fight, so he can sit back and be optimistic and, you know, dream dreams. But those dreams aren't happening, so sorry.
No, sir.
But ROH, this is a big event for them, and I think, like I said, you know, without Adam Cole, who has headlined both of their pay-per-views prior to this, I think it was really important they put together a solid card. I think they have.
It's really good. It's really deep. A couple of matches that could steal the show, and you especially love Maria versus ODB. So it's definitely worth the purchase.
Hey, we never get women in ROH. This is special. This is interesting.
When was the last time we watched a woman wrestle in the company?
I can't ever recall it. I'm sure it's happened, but in my time of watching ROH, I don't ever remember it happening.
Well, the only women I remember in ROH are, like, really back in the day when, like, Sarah Del Rey was competing.
Yeah, like, Maria was talking about if she'd ever wrestled in ROH. One of the times was in a tag against Sarah Del Rey, and I forget the other time she said, but never has wrestled singles in an ROH. And, I mean, there have been a few odds and ends singles matches with women, but I really just want to see, like, a women's division. I want to see what ROH's vision of women's wrestling would be.
Is there enough women out there to kind of make a deep roster? Like, that's kind of what UFC's biggest problem was when they tried to start up their own women's division, if there were enough fighters out there.
I think so. Look at promotions like Shimmer. Look at, you know, you got a girl like Candice LeRae who's out there. They're a PWG. There's lots of people out there. I think, you know, you don't need a lot, because I don't think they're going to use it like on every show that ROH does, but on these pay-per-views, if you could have a women's match, yeah, that's a nice little added feature, I think.
And of course, you need someone to kind of build the division around, so you need like that one big star. And I mean, unless you think ODB or Maria can carry the torch.
Well, you know, who knows? I just think I'm interested to see what ROH's take on women's wrestling would be. Because I think it would be vastly different. I think it would be much closer to what we're seeing in NXT than what we're seeing in WWE.
Or just send them all to NXT. Like, let's build the division there. We already got a good crop.
Now you're dreaming again. You're like ROH is just going to send them people?
Sure, why not?
No, that's not happening.
Adam Cole, baby!
Well,
you're next in line, buddy.
That's true. Well, Adam is still around. Adam is not talking. I'm very upset. Like, Adam comes out there now. He doesn't talk. I don't know what's going on.
Staying quiet. Good. Add to the mystery.
He gave the fans the finger in Nashville for no reason at all.
It wasn't directed at us, though.
No, he likes us. I want to get him on the program. I want to know what's going on. Like, I heard from Adam a couple times this week. He talked with JR. He talked with Sam Roberts. But both of those were taped interviews from a while ago. What's going on with Adam now? Is he getting better? When's he coming back? I need to know. I feel like I'm Steve Corino here, just like rambling on about Adam Cole. But I want to know these things.
Hey, snag that exclusive, man. Get Adam Cole back on.
I don't know. I want to get him back. We'll see. Maybe after the pay-per-view, if he shows up there, maybe we can figure something out. I don't know, but we are working on Members of the Kingdom for hopefully next week. We'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. I rarely like tease stuff like that, but we've had them on before, so I'm, well, not Maria. We've never had Maria. We've had Matt Taven. We've actually had all the guys in the Kingdom. We just have never had Maria, so we're trying. We're working on it.
Cool beans.
Alrighty, so that about does it for ROH. We're very excited for their show coming up in about 2 or 3 weeks. Well, I'm more excited than him for Fastlane, to be quite honest. That being said, the WWE, boy, what a week they had, and none of it had to do with Raw. It all had to do with Twitter and all the different Twitter scandals that are going on in the WWE. What Twitter scandal would you like to start with?
Wienergate?
Wow, that's not very classy, Walter.
That's what they're calling it.
That's, well, we just because people are calling it that, we could be a little classier on the podcast, you know.
What, Wienergate isn't classy?
I don't think it is.
All right, well.
Seth Rollins just, you know, exposed to the world.
Yeah, I've seen too much of Seth Rollins in the last week, more than I ever thought I would.
Yeah, so, boy oh boy, never get your fiancé ticked off and never let your fiancé go in your phone. That would be the lessons learned here, right?
Yeah, and don't screw around when you're trying to break into WWE and send nudes of yourself to a top WWE superstar, because that could kill your career before it even starts.
Well, as far as we know right now, everyone's still employed. No one's fined, suspended, anything like that. I just think because of the way this went down, as much as, yeah, it's embarrassing, it's bad, it really puts the WWE in a bad spot, given some of the things they've said, especially recently, what Triple H said about China on the podcast with Stone Cold, and just their policies with regard nudity and all that. They're in a bad spot. But, that said, can we control our significant others? Like, is that really our responsibility? Like, and Seth Rollins has the best defense in the world. He was in the ring when it happened, by the way, on Monday Night Raw. So it's not like he had anything to do with this.
Yeah, but it shows a lot about his character, because it does look that he was cheating. We had an exclusive interview with a girl from British Columbia.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't want to get into that. She just, whatever.
It's, hey, I've seen the pictures. I've seen a lot of stuff that we didn't put on the site, and it's completely legit. So
I'm not saying it's legit or not. I just thought, nah, I wasn't a fan of that. It was Jerry Springer-like.
Hey, I wasn't crazy about it either, but when you're trying to build news, news is news, and Seth Rollins was hot at that time. So TMZ us all you want, man. That's how we ruled for that story.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that they've started that Bad News Barrett thing?
Yeah, see, too? Even WWE is getting in on, like, the trashy news, so whatever.
You know what was funny, though? TMZ, I didn't think, actually had anything on this. Did they?
They did, yeah.
Did they?
Actually, even some major news publications.
No, I know major news publications did, but I looked it up on TMZ. I didn't find anything.
No, TMZ did a story on Lila Schultz, yeah, his fiance.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was what it was. I looked up Seth Rollins and not her, but yeah, I was wondering, because TMZ kind of... It's awfully convenient how TMZ finds these stories out about the WWE, and I just found it odd that they weren't front and center for this one, because this screams them. Well, I mean, this is their type of story.
Well, either there's some sort of relationship between the two companies, or WWE just has a leak who's telling them everything. But I think there is some sort of business agreement where they will tell TMZ some stories, and then WWE will break it hours later. So it's all good. That's how a lot of industries go.
Well, whatever, Walder. I'm older. I your moral fiber is not has been eroded away more than mine, I think.
Do you think this is going to affect Rollins moving forward in terms of any push he was going to?
Actually, that's what I was going to wrap up with. I don't think this is going to do a thing. Triple H actually commented on this on the NXT call and basically reiterated the fact that Seth Rollins had apologized and wouldn't go into any other detail beyond that. I think... But the way he classified it, it was like it was an unfortunate incident. And, you know, it was just kind of like, it seems like, as far as WWE is concerned, they're clearly blaming the fiancé for this and not him.
Yeah, they said it was a Colby Lopez situation and not a Seth Rollins situation. And that's right. This is his business. He's out of fiancé right now. But in terms of his character and whatever they're going to do on television, if he's going to become world champion... he doesn't have to worry about kind of regressing because of some nude photos.
Yeah, it's just one of those things I don't think, you know, I'd feel awkward about it if he was punished, because, you know, like, you can't control other people in your life like that. It wasn't, like, it's his fault for cheating and all that, but you know what? John Cena has a divorce, by the way, if people didn't know, but WWE kept that pretty quiet.
Yeah, and, you know, the scandals with some other ladies and men from the past. So, but you implied that there was another scandal going on this week. Am I missing something here?
Oh, there's a bunch. Like, where do you want to start?
Well, we just talked about Seth Rollins. What else is going on that's so bad?
Well, Darren Young was not happy with his company.
Oh, I have not followed that story, actually.
Darren Young, who most people were maybe not aware, is still employed by WWE. He took to Twitter and really went to town on his company about the fact that they are doing shows this week in the United Arab Emirates, where it is customary that they pretty much don't like his kind of people over there, being people who are gay, and obviously he wasn't on this tour, and he felt that the WWE shouldn't even be having the tour. The WWE was forced into a response, and they basically said that they were keeping him home for his own safety. While they respect his rights to express his opinions and views, they cannot change the world, basically, is what they had to say. And then that was out there, so,
Yeah, he's entitled to his opinion, and, I mean, he's justified as a gay man, and obviously in that country, it's not held in the highest regard, if at all. So, but there's a right and a wrong way to do things, and we've seen a lot of people get released over far less, so Darren Young might want to bite his tongue next time.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, and this is the part that I don't like, I think it's a double standard. I think he's going to survive because of the fact of everyone knows who he is and what he is. And I think that's wrong. Like that's just as wrong as people discriminating against him for what he is.
Well, I mean, when you're an entertainment program and you go out and you talk to the schools and you do television appearances or whatnot, and you want to kind of transcend to a lot of different, you know, age groups and sexes and, you know, ethnicities or sexual orientations, like, I mean, sure, it helps to have a guy who's openly gay on your roster. And frankly, if it wasn't for that, he probably would have been gone a long time ago.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about TMZ earlier. That was a total setup.
Totally.
Like when he came out on TMZ.
Yeah, it was way too convenient the way it happened.
Yeah, so, you know, it is what it is, but the WWE, they are still off to the United Arab Emirates, and they will still take the money that they're going to make. And, you know, it is what it is. It's business. I mean, they're not the only company that does business there. How many friggin' celebrities have went over to Dubai and just milked that place for all the money they're willing to give away?
Is there any more scandals that I'm missing? Like, is this like Young and the Restless now, where there's just going to be like these crappy love triangles and scandals and backlash and whatever?
Yeah, I don't know. There was one other Twitter thing. I don't think it was as big a thing, and I'm trying to remember what it was, but I can't think of it.
Well, it wasn't a nude photo leak.
No, it was. It was definitely not. You know, as you've deemed it, Wienergate.
I didn't deem it that. That's what people are calling it.
On this podcast you did, and sure as heck wasn't me.
It was a hashtag for a little bit.
Well, that's wonderful, Walter. There's hashtags about a million things.
Yeah, well, that was...
On this podcast, you are the one that deemed it Wienergate. You're the one that brought it to light.
Fine, it's all my fault. It always is.
You're the one that busted out the wieners, sir.
I could have said the correct term. That would have gone over.
Well, then we definitely have to go with the explicit rating for this show.
Thank you. See, I did this show a favor.
Walter just trying to take credit for not being bad at what he's doing. That's great.
Bless my heart.
Yeah, that's good stuff, Walter. You're going to go a long way. Oh, by the way, have you heard from WWE? It is week three of Chris Walder applied to WWE Creative Watch. Any news?
I have not yet, and you know I would be gloating if I did. Even if it was a rejection letter, I'd be reading that.
No, we want to hear it. I'm almost, like, it'd be great if you got the job, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I'm almost more excited if you got rejected to actually hear the rejection letter.
Exactly. I
really am.
I would want them to go into detail too about like why they didn't pick me. And
no, it would be a form letter, Chris Walder.
No, I don't want no, you know, generic, the same thing you send out to everybody. I want them to say, you know what, Chris Walder, you're Swiss, you're Canadian, bad chance. See you later.
Yeah, personally from Vince McMahon too. None of this, you know, Stephanie stuff. Oh, that's it. I remember the third thing.
Oh, Eureka!
But you don't want a letter from Stephanie. Clearly you want one from Vince, right?
You know, either way. I mean, I'd be impressed if I got one at all.
So Stephanie, Vince, this man has applied to your company. Like, come on. Like,
but what's this third scandal now? It has something to do with Stephanie?
Well, Stephanie triggered what it was about, so yes. It's not about Stephanie per se, but it is about one Triple H. And of course, Triple H had his comments about China and the Hall of Fame. Well, Vince Russo had China on a podcast that you had to pay for. And China, what is it now? 16 years since the relationship, give or take a year. Now all of a sudden says Triple H hit her. Really?
You might want to bring that up a lot earlier if he did.
I'm sorry. I find her credibility totally lacking and just... If I was Triple H, in all honesty, even though there's no money there, I would sue the living hell out of her. But he won't. But I would.
No, he won't. Of course, it's again convenient that she brings this up after Triple H says, yeah, she has no business being in the Hall of Fame, her, you know, alluding to the fact that her adult film career is kind of, you know, tainted her legacy, and that he doesn't want his kids to Google her name on, you know, and find out any erotic photos. So.
By the way, Seth Rollins, Hall of Fame, no, done.
Oh yeah, of course. Now we've seen this junk. Like,
yeah, we Google him, we get that.
But are they going to put it on the back of behind the podium on the big screen and just remind everybody? They'll even have a meme of Randy Orton RKOing it. Like some people were. I actually saw that. That was hilarious. Actually had Randy Orton RKOing the you know what.
Well, that's coming up at WrestleMania.
That'll be the poster for WrestleMania. Seth Rollins' nude photo and an RKO, and then that's the selling point right there.
I don't know. Walter, you're really trying to get us into like an X-rated show today.
Hey, well, you know what? 50 Shades of Grey releases tonight, so you know what? This is very fitting.
Oh, there's a question for you coming out of this in a little bit, but we got to finish this up. So basically, right. You know, China has no credibility left, does she? Well, like,
none.
Am I wrong in that?
No, of course not.
I was appalled by the fact that she was saying this, and of course, Triple H released a statement basically saying this is a complete fabrication and just not at all even close to the truth. It was in much more legalese than that, but the point is, like, anytime China's shooting her mouth off, only bad things can happen, and then you know, her talking about how she's still hung up on the fact that Hunter left her for Stephanie. That's what this all comes down to.
Well, if you can upgrade like that, I mean, you'd be crazy not to.
Like, I mean, that's what this all comes down to at the end of the day. She can't take it that she got left for Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah, she's jealous 16 years later.
Yeah, and I mean, look at how her life's gone. Look at how Stephanie's and Hunter's is gone. I guess there's a lot to be jealous about.
Yeah, she's in porn, she's had a sex tape come out, she's been into drugs, alcohol, she's basically a no-name right now, but Triple H and Stephanie are, you know, part near the top of one of the biggest companies in North America, or in the world, so, yeah, I'd feel a little bit cheated, too.
Yeah, and then, I guess, there's only one other thing that I think I wanted to talk about, and then we'll get into you and 50 Shades of Grey, well, what's going on there.
Oh, joy.
But, well, you wanted to, like, let the people in on our personal lives more. While
all right, fine. That's what do you want to talk about?
But wrestling-wise, what we need to cover, Rikishi in the Hall of Fame, if the Usos are not in this company, this doesn't even happen. Like, am I totally wrong in that?
Yeah, this selection has generated a lot of controversy. A lot of people out there surprisingly feel like he doesn't deserve to be in there.
I think he's the modern Coco Beware. I really do. I mean, I know he had a brief run with the tag title. He had a brief run with the Intercontinental title. But what do we know Rikishi for? We know him for... When I think of Rikishi, I think of two things. And you probably think of the same two things. But I'm going to say them nonetheless.
Yeah.
You think of him for backing his butt up into everyone's face. And you think of one of the most horrible promo lines in the history of the WWE. I did it, Rock. It was me. That's Rikishi's career to me.
Yeah. Well, what did he say? I did it for the Rock?
Oh, I did it for the Rock. See, I even screwed up the bad line. But it doesn't deserve to be said right. It's that bad.
Remember that six-man Hell in a Cell match?
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah.
And he took the bump into that huge tractor trailer of, like, hay or whatever it was.
You look at the six guys who were in that match, and, I mean, all future Hall of Famers, some already in there. But Stone Cold Steve Austin is the only one who's actually in the Hall of Fame right now. And the second person to get out of that match
to
be in the Hall of Fame.
Was Shawn in that match? No, it wasn't.
Austin, Rock, Angle, Taker, Rikishi, and Triple H.
Oh, okay.
So Rikishi is the second member of that Hell in a Cell travesty to be in the Hall of Fame. And you look at his title reigns. He had one reign with the Head Shrinkers as a tag team champion. He also had another one with Scotty Too Hotty. And then he was a one-time Intercontinental Champion. So it's not like he had the backing of, like, you know, 50, like, an Edge-like championship reign. So most people will remember him from the Attitude Era, doing the Too Cool stuff, being an overweight guy dancing in the ring with a thong. I personally wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame this early, especially when there are so many other deserving names out there. But you know what? The fact that the Usos are his kids helps. They're obviously going to induct him. He'll probably give a good speech, but in retrospect, I don't think it's one of the better selections that WWE has made.
This is a thin year, man. Like, I mean, some of the names we're hearing about, aside from that, I mean, Ray Stevens, who's an old-time wrestler who, no mistake, probably deserves it and all that, but isn't drawing flies for this. Another name that's been kicked around, and by the way, the folks at MLW have connections to this man. He hasn't heard about it yet, so if he is, it's news to him. Larry Zbysko is rumored to be going in the Hall of Fame as well, but as far as last we've heard from Larry Zbysko, he had no idea this was going down.
Any other names that you think could realistically make it this year? Because I don't think there's going to be any major, like, Undertaker.
No, I think they're saving a lot of people for 32, and that's the problem. I think Undertaker is clearly being saved for that. I think Michael Hayes is a name that probably will go in
right.
32. I think this whole WrestleMania 31, I almost think with the challenge that is Cowboy Stadium and all that lies ahead, I almost think like the WWE is treating this like whatever, let's get it over with.
Yeah, and I completely agree, and I've mentioned that before. Like, WrestleMania 32 is, like, probably their biggest show ever, and right now WrestleMania 31, while it's going to be, you know, the matches are fine, and, you know, the Hall of Fame, it's going to have some moments, but it's not really as special as, like, you know, it's going to be in Cowboys Stadium, like 100,000 people, possibly the biggest card ever. So, you know, WrestleMania 31 kind of feels like a wash.
Well, let's put it this way. The NBA put 107,000 something in there for their All-Star game, which is All-Star weekend for our NBA fans this weekend in New York City. Not that we talk about that here, but just to put it in perspective, that's a huge deal for the NBA. That's one of their marquee events. If the WWE fails to beat that number, I think it's a huge failure for them as a company, quite frankly.
They need to at least get that. The All-Star game is just an All-Star game. WrestleMania is their Super Bowl. So they need to get 100,000 people, but they have to book the right matches and they have to build up some guys because there can't be any, you know, down moments on a card like that. They need just quality across the board. And if they were just to use the guys they have on the roster right now, with the exception of like one or two, you know, outside, you know, returns, they wouldn't stand a chance.
Yeah, I think that they need to pull some rabbits out of hats. I think there's two guys right now that are dead set against wrestling on this show that they need to wrestle on this show.
And it's obviously
Stone Cold Steve Austin. He has a podcast. You may have heard of him. And Shawn Michaels. I think both Texas guys have ties to the Texas area. I think both of those guys need to be on this show, and obviously not wrestling each other. I think wrestling up-and-coming stars. I've already mentioned who I think, you know, Shawn will end up in there with. I think Daniel Bryan and him is an obvious matchup, and Stone Cold needs to be in there with somebody. It's probably not going to be CM Punk. Maybe Stone Cold Dean Ambrose. I don't know.
It would probably be Austin versus Cena.
Yeah. See, that does nothing for anyone. Like, that's the WWE's thinking. And I say, what does that do for anyone?
It's an attraction. It's something for WWE.
It's an attraction, but, like, it helps them fill their stadium maybe for that day. But it's so short-term thinking. Like, what does it do the next day? Does anyone care?
I just don't think Austin would return to the ring to fight anybody besides an established superstar. I don't think he has any interest in building anybody up, especially in a return match. You know, how long has it been since he last wrestled? It was WrestleMania 19. So
yeah, that was
over
his last
decade.
Match. Yep.
So yeah, he's not coming back to fight Ambrose.
You never know. He might like Dean.
Oh, well, they better do something with Ambrose in the next year to make it worth his time.
Get Dean on the podcast. Maybe they'll bond. Maybe they'll hate each other. Do something.
Yeah, tease a WrestleMania match. That'll be his next big interview. Just kayfabe with Dean Ambrose, and then they'll stare each other down. Maybe Ambrose will throw a punch or something, and there's your WrestleMania.
Yeah, in all honesty, that would be a great way to do it, wouldn't it?
To do it on the podcast,
To have Stone Cold do his podcast, and not maybe come to blows like you're saying, but maybe have it be a very stiff interview
right. Between
he and whoever this person would be. I'm saying Dean Ambrose, because to me, the guy who it should be is CM Punk, and the closest thing to CM Punk we have right now is Dean Ambrose. But whoever it would be, if they had a really stiff interview on that podcast and it just felt unnatural and uncomfortable, that would be a brilliant way to market a match if they were going in that direction.
Hey, and they've set the bar so high already with the interviews of Vince and Triple H. Like, they're going to bring superstars on to do it anyway. Why not have, if you're going to have Austin wrestle at WrestleMania 32 anyways, have his opponent come on and just start teasing something there? But it would kind of hurt his podcast, though, wouldn't it? Because it would be clear that that's strictly for the use of build for WrestleMania, so you would almost not take it seriously anymore.
Well, yeah, but you could do it, like, if they did it strictly on the network and it never ended up on his Podcast One show, that's one way how you differentiate it. And actually, I was listening to Stone Cold today, or what was it, yesterday, and he said something that I never even noticed, but it's very interesting. When they market that on the WWE Network, it's the Stone Cold podcast. When he does it for Podcast One, it's the Steve Austin show.
Oh, wow, I never noticed that.
Neither did I, but it is a distinction, and it is a difference, and, you know, buyer beware, I guess, when you're watching on the WWE Network, because Stone Cold even himself said he gets a little confused on who he should be when he does those interviews.
Right.
If he's Stone Cold, the ex-wrestler, or if he's Steve Austin, the guy who has a podcast who's an ex-wrestler, which is very close. They're almost the same guy, but there's a little bit of difference there.
Well, so far, so good anyways.
Yeah, we'll see how he does with Miss Stephanie, because I think that is the next one.
Oh, yeah, Stephanie would be a good one, yeah.
That will be a challenge, because I don't know how that would go. Because Stephanie, let's face it, she's good at that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she is a pro's pro when it comes to, you know, it always ends up with Stephanie where we end up back with smiles on people's faces somehow. And I don't know how we always end up with that getting to that point, but she finds a way to get there every single time.
Yeah, again, I never thought of Stephanie McMahon actually doing it, but you know what? For a third interview, that would be a really good choice.
It seems the obvious one with what we've done and so far, and I think she is a key element to, like, all of this. I mean, her father's Vince McMahon, obviously her husband's Triple H. She's the heir apparent to take over this company if anything ever happened to Vince. I mean, you know, it's the interview that's logically next to me. Unless Shane McMahon wants to come out of hiding and his dad will let him on the WWE Network, I think that's about it.
Well, it's probably going to be another couple of months before we see it anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, like, post-WrestleMania seems to be a time that makes sense.
Definitely won't be one before it.
Yeah, like, you're going to, like, because obviously the challenge, and one of the things, with all that's went on this week, by the way, Walder, we had the big conference call things that are usually, like, huge news with the numbers coming out and all of that, but that got lost in the shuffle of, what were you calling it?
Wienergate?
Yeah. So that,
why do I have to say it? You can say it.
Well, you're the one that brought it into the spectrum of our podcast. So I
just a word.
Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah, well, like, I could say Oscar Mayer Wiener. It's the same thing.
That's right.
Just a wiener.
Yeah, Walder's going to be taking his girlfriend out for hot dogs for Valentine's Day. That's kind of classy
meat.
Dude he is.
$3 street meat.
There you go. Hey, you know what? With me, that would work. I love the Toronto hot dogs stands. That's good for me.
Well, I'm not trying to win you over.
No, I understand that.
You already love me, buddy. I have nothing else to prove.
That's true. anyway, you prove it every week on this podcast.
Thank you.
For good or for bad, you take it as you will. But anyway, I have totally lost track of what we were talking
about. We're talking about numbers.
Oh, yes, the numbers came out. So the WWE is, not really saying much about anything. They would not answer questions as they often do. I don't understand these investor calls. They open things up for questions, and then they just refuse to answer them.
Like, they'll see a sea of hands or whatever, or like people like at waiting.
Well, it's a teleconference, so I mean, it is done through the phone and all that. But
oh,
like,
okay.
They get these questions, and it's like, yeah. So, how do you feel about in comparison to the UFC and all that? Well, we're not answering that. No, we're not like the UFC. We're family entertainment. All right. Moving on. What is the next question? And they shoot them down like. Totally, it's like, it's bizarre to me.
Yeah, that's weird.
But apparently the WWE Network did pretty well coming out at the end of the year. They got their million subscribers, and they were able to keep a lot of those people from November. It will be interesting to see. I'm interested to see, because with that free month thing, they set it up in such a way that if you're not paying attention, it will automatically renew. I wonder how many people they catch, and then that next month would say, no, I didn't mean to pay for this for a second month. I wonder how many times that happens.
I know a lot of people who have canceled, and it takes a month before it actually goes into effect? Like, you have to cancel it a month ahead of time?
Something like that. I mean, it depends. With this free thing, as long as you cancel it before the next billing date, you shouldn't have to pay a thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? And then the February, obviously, Fastlane, the whole shebang, it's free. So,
but depends on the method of how you pay, too. Because I know with PayPal, I can just pull the rug out from under them, like, on a whim.
Yeah, you can stop your PayPal from giving out money, right?
Yeah, where with a credit card, it wouldn't be that easy and all that.
Okay, well, there you go. But I know a lot of people have tried to bend the rules there and cancel and go back and in and out with their accounts, and they've found a way to not be detected by WWE. So all the power to them.
But, you know, it is what it is. We will see. But, yeah, the conference call did go down, it should be noted. And, it was rather uneventful, which for the WWE, given some of their past conference calls, is probably a good thing. I mean, they have had some, although I guess the one takeaway from it was Vince did kind of mock the fans for their reaction to the Royal Rumble. Which, would we expect anything less of Vince McMahon?
What is he going to do? Say, I mean, what was it, the canceled WWE Network hashtag that trended for so long? And he knew everyone was going to continue watching the program. Like, it was all just hearsay and mumbo jumbo, and no one actually.
Well, Vince McMahon has said it many times. He's a believer. Any press is good press. Even Wienergate, probably on some level.
Wienergate.
Vince McMahon thinks is a good thing on some level.
I don't know about that one.
Well, that's always been his expression. Any exposure is good exposure. Seth Rollins may question that.
Even Seth Rollins' exposure.
That's what I'm saying. That was the joke, Walder. Way to go.
Welcome to the party, Walder.
Hey. So there we have it. It was an eventful week in WWE. We did not talk a lick about Raw. I don't even remember what happened on Raw, to be honest with you.
Neither do I.
Once Kevin Steen held up that belt, Raw was a distant memory for me. We're looking forward to having another ROH guest. Hopefully next week we have some feelers out, and we will see what comes of that. We have a couple people in mind, but we will see if that all pans out. I think I already kind of alluded to it earlier in the podcast, so if you're paying attention, you already know. If you weren't, well, you missed out. come back next week. You'll find out who we ended up with, and we'll be talking more about ROH's 13th anniversary pay-per-view and whatever the heck the WWE is up to, as they will be hot on the heels to Fastlane. We'll be like previewing Fastlane, I guess, next week, Walder.
Oh, joy.
You're not excited for the Fastlane?
Why would I be?
Nikki Bella's fighting...
oh, boy, Nikki Bella. I can't wait to see her.
Nikki Bella just getting rage from Chris Walder.
Is her name Charlotte? Is her name Sasha Banks? Then I don't care.
Wow.
There's my favoritism for the show.
All righty.
No Young Bucks love for me, but I'll favorite the NXT girls over what I'm seeing on television.
All righty. And in that win by Kevin Steen. Or Kevin Owens. Super kick. We had one. I liked it.
We saw a super kick. Hey, the Young Bucks gave him some love on Twitter, too.
Oh, everyone gave him love. Adam Cole gave him love. Everyone loves Kevin.
Ring of Honor, too?
Yeah, Ring of Honor.
They didn't say specifically what he did, but they said congratulations.
Yeah, they kind of alluded to it. And there was lots of shots of Kevin with the ROH belt and then the NXT belt. And... I mean, when you look at the history of that championship, as we wrap things up here, there's been six NXT champions. Three of them are former ROH world champions.
Oh, yeah. Wait, Seth Rollins, Zayn, and Owens.
Yeah.
So there you go. And I'm sure we might, well, no, Finn Balor was never actually in ROH.
Not officially, no.
No. Maybe he made, like, one match or something.
Well, he faced some ROH talents. I know he had a match with Adam Cole, and he's faced people within ROH, but I don't think he's ever been on an official ROH show.
Well, Hideo Itami always has a chance. He did some ROH stuff for a while, too, so.
Fought some Bryan Danielson back in the day.
Classics.
Yeah, so it's interesting, though. This Fastlane, I think, is a bad deal for both Daniel Bryan and for Roman Reigns. The one thing I will say about Raw, both of those guys are not as over as they were when we started down this stupid path.
No, that was just a bad crowd. I wouldn't look too much into it.
It's the second week in a row, though. Daniel
not
Bryan...
Not Reigns, maybe, not Bryan.
No, Daniel Bryan did not get, like, a full-blown Daniel Bryan reaction the week before, either. I think this is a nightmare for both of them.
Well, no, I mean, last year was just, like, special because he hadn't won the title yet, but now he's been champion, he's been gone for a while. He's still getting a loud pop considering what everyone else on the roster is getting, but it's nowhere near going to match what he did on the road to WrestleMania 30. With Roman Reigns, he should be worried. Bryan's spot is solidified.
I don't know if he's as solidified as you think, Walder.
What do you think? We're going to see Bryan fighting for, like, the Intercontinental title or something?
Maybe that'll be his match at WrestleMania 32.
Bryan and...
Shawn Michaels and Daniel Bryan for the Intercontinental title.
Build prestige back to that single.
I mean, it would make sense in another era, but in this era, the Intercontinental title, it means something. It just means something in Japan.
Yeah, in Japan. There you go.
And on that note, whether you're listening from Japan, from America, from Canada, from anywhere in this fine world, we thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, tell a friend. Spread the word at Condo on the Moon. You can find out all the details on what's going on with us with the podcast, be it what we're planning on talking about, what guests we may have. It'll all be there. And, you know, just keeping up with your Young Bucks and Kevin Owens news, because that pretty much has been our Twitter feed for the past 24, 48 hours. It's been a lot of Kevin Owens, a lot of Young Bucks. And we like it that way. So if you like it or you don't like it, you better learn to love it and be back here next week.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better. More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.